Dead On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop renewal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Past the hour, and we begin a new week of broadcasting, the last week of broadcasting of poor old, tired, bedraggled 2010. Or 2853, if you're going by the old Ab Urbe Condita Roman calendar. Yeah, 2853. I'm not sure what year it is in the Mayan calendar, but we're only 2 years away from the predicted Mayan apocalypse, so you never know. Gather ye rosebuds while you may, right? Ain't gonna be gathering no rosebuds in this weather, at least none that aren't just frozen stiff. God, it's cold. We had our white Christmas. We had our white day after Christmas. And we had a white day after the day after Christmas. And I have a rule. I have a rule, and that is this. Every snowfall after Christmas, as of Christmas, the day that Christmas ends, you know, the morning of the 26th of December, snow stops being charming and becomes a damnable nuisance. Sound fair? I thought so. And it will be a damnable nuisance until it goes away. They're saying, I don't know, the weather dude is saying we may see 45 degrees by the end of the week. Woohoo! Partay. That'll feel like running around in bathing suit weather. But we are almost fresh plum out of 2010, and no, don't count on me for any the top 10 countdown, biggest, worstest, baddest, meanest, stinkinest, rottenest, bestest, I don't do those. Because I think we do a pretty good job of covering them over the course of the year, right? Of course, that didn't mean that everybody, well, you can, there's no sense in turning on the television right now. Seldom is there any sense in turning on the television at all, but especially now because everybody's retrospecting. Somehow or another, that sounds like something unpleasant that happens at the doctor's office. Yeah, let me get the retrospect up here, and we'll just, oh my God, you know what I mean. But it is the beginning of the week, as noted. And that can mean only one thing. That's right, you know it. Ladies and gentlemen, kiddies and cousins, step right up. Because it is Moran Monday on the horn. Couple of days after Christmas edition. Put down the candy canes, step away from the cheese log, and waddle over here to see the best that right-wing Moranity has to offer. Morans of all sizes, shapes, dimensions, but they have one thing in common. They are right-wing. Big Morans, little Morans, you can't tell the Morans without a program. And this is the program with which you can tell the Morans. Being Morans, you just can't tell them much. Behind this thin veil of cybernetic curtain cloth, you will find Morans beyond your imagination. And for little more than the cheap price of less than 5 cents per hour of programming, if you become a member of the Thrifty Nifty 250 at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, the PayPal button or the snail mail address. They both work equally well. You can avail yourself of these amazing, shocking, thoroughly dumbfounding acts of profound morality. Parents are advised to guard small children before and take care that they are not overly shocked by what goes on behind the curtain. No one will be admitted after the first 5 minutes. It is, in fact, Moran Monday on the horn. Head for the hills, we'll give you up to your armpits in Morans. I have an early on nomination. Born of what I would see when I walked back and forth to and fro, back into the studio and stuff on Christmas Day. I nominate the History Channel. Because it's anything but. I remember in its early heady days of having nothing to run as programming, we called it the All Hitler Network. Because it was all Hitler all the time. How I yearn for those days. Because now it's anything but. At least the Hitler stuff was old newsreel footage and it was factual. The History Channel has given up all pretense of actual fact-based the programming. All day long. Christmas. All day long. It was one in search of Jesus after another. And it got a little old after a while. Truly, it did. I mean, they worked over... They just took the whole New Testament out and just flogged the daylights out of it for 24 solid hours. And some of it was just straight up made up. I remember one that talked about the temptation of Jesus up on the mountain. And they treated it not as religion. You know what it was like? It was like watching what would happen in a classroom if the creationists got their way. That's exactly what it was like. Because nothing was offered as religion. Nothing was offered as myth. Nothing was offered as being legendary. It was offered as, what's the name of the channel? History. Which it isn't, even a little bit. The piece they did on Revelation was enough to send me screaming into the snow. And you know, with a nice blanket of snow on the ground, sound carries a long way. No, the Revelations thing. And then there will come four horsemen, and their names are famine, misery, death, and psoriasis. It was, to say the least, frustrating. Can we suggest a name change? Could we maybe engage in this big old humongous letter-writing campaign? Dear History Channel, please change your name to Mythology Channel or Speculation Channel. Anything but history, because you're not doing history anymore. Even a little bit. So there's our first nominee. Our second nominee comes to us from, I promise I'm not deliberately picking on any one state. It just happens this way. Our second nominee comes to us from the state of Texas. If you recall Friday's program, in which, as David from Maine noted, you heard such timeless horn classics as They Want It All and Godless, Soulless, Miserable, Motherless Repiglicans, right up there with Andy Williams bringing out the Claudine Longet, I guess. But, no, we go to the state of Texas. An article that Sandra turned me on to from a website called the Texas Tribune, texastribune.org. Headline, well, back up. If you remember, we spent a significant amount of time on, what was it, Friday? Yeah, Friday, night before Christmas, and
all through the country. Never mind. We spent a considerable amount of time talking about what's going on in Pritchard, Alabama, where the Grover Norquists of the world have finally gotten their way, and they and the anti-taxers have utterly destroyed a number of human lives by letting the pension fund just die. Right? And I pointed out the obvious, because it's rather hard to avoid, that I would warrant it being Alabama, and particularly South Alabama, that a significant proportion of those people who were suffering there had voted for family values Republicans because they weren't no socialist, leaning, atheistic, fascist, communist, Democrat liberals. You know? I mean, you know, it's true. Well, hence this little trip to Texas, courtesy of Sandra. Headline: injured ER patients can't find attorneys, blame tort reform. This is one of those examples of the triumph of long-term messaging on the part of the filthy, misbegotten, hate-infused right wing, and its ability to affect change that has real-world consequences, negative consequences, and to get the people that they're hurting to actually do their dirty work for them. The story concerns a lady by the name of Connie Spears. Connie Spears had excruciating, recurring leg pain. She had suffered from blood clots before. At one point, doctors, according to the Texas Tribune, had installed a filter in one of her heart's main blood supplies, one of the veins coming back. And so it was that at one point her pain became unbearable, and she went to Christus Santa Rosa Hospital in San Antonio. It was the Friday before Memorial Day. In other words, probably understaffed on the best day, because that's how we run hospitals these days here in America. Understaffed, overworked. And statistics show time and again that the worst time to ever be in an emergency room is on a weekend. So the ER doc comes in to examine Ms. Spears, and he ran some tests and sent her out the door on her way. He diagnosed her with, wait for it, any of you who've had any sort of medical training or anything will be something approaching fit to scream. Diagnosed her with bilateral leg pain. Now, bilateral leg pain is a diagnosis that means both her legs hurt. She went to the emergency room in excruciating agony, and the doctor discharged her and wrote down, both her legs hurt. She had a history of blood clotting disorder in her legs. It was all there, but this emergency room doctor wrote down, both her legs hurt, go home. I mean, this is really the disastrous equivalent of take two aspirin and call me in the morning. Take two pills and skip a day. Well, Connie Spears' story doesn't end there. Connie Spears, 3 days later, wound up in another hospital in the San Antonio area. She had called 911. The emergency room doctors there determined that the filter that had been installed in one of her primary veins had become severely clotted up and had caused both her kidneys to fail and her tissue in her legs to become necrotic. To die. Her legs died. She had lost consciousness. And when Ms. Spears awakened, she awakened to find that both of her legs, from above the knee downward, were gone. In order to save the rest of her, the emergency room doctors at this other hospital had been compelled to amputate both legs above the knee. All of this because a doctor 3 days earlier, when she could have been saved, perhaps, had diagnosed her with both of your legs hurt and sent her home. Horrifying story, right? Yes. So you're probably sitting there thinking, well, she's going to sue her a doctor. Not in Texas. As the article from the Texas Tribune relates, she started trying to find a medical malpractice lawyer to represent her, to sue the first ER doctor, the one who said, well, damn, looks like both of your legs hurt. Why don't you go on home? And one after another, lawyer after lawyer after lawyer, they all looked at her case and said, my God, this is a huge medical malpractice case. Gracious sakes, I haven't seen anything this obvious or this egregious in years of practicing law. I mean, you know the speech. And then they sent, like the first ER doctor, sent her home. Not on this, in this instance, however, because the lawyers were negligent, like the doctor was, but because the law in Texas has been so dummied up by right-wingers and tort reformers that it is functionally impossible for Connie Spears to be compensated for what was taken from her. She went into a hospital with two legs, on two legs, and now she doesn't have them because of a doctor before Memorial Day weekend, who, for all we know, was thinking about the boating he was going to do, or the horseback riding, or whatever. Maybe he's going to fly to Vegas. Who knows? Or church. Maybe he's just going to go to church. I mean, really, honest to Jesus, out there, you in the reach of my voice, if a woman looks at you and says, my legs hurt really badly, how many of you would, even without being a doctor, begin to wonder why that is? Would you order some tests? What would you do? With a woman in abject agony, what would you do? Would you send her home and say, here's your diagnosis, ma'am. Both your legs hurt. Bilateral leg pain. That's true, Lottie, that when I said take two aspirins and call me in. Yeah, the aspirin would have been a good idea. Apparently he didn't do that. Texas. Now, I mentioned that all the lawyers look at her and say, this is a great case, only it's not a great case in Texas. Why? Well, let's go backwards a little bit and look at the overarching picture of tort reform in America. You remember the lady, and we all do, who spilled scalding hot, near-boiling coffee in her lap and received a court judgment against McDonald's? That case was bruited from one end of this country to the other, largely by right-wing talk show hosts and right-wing television babbling heads, as proof that the legal civil justice system in this country was out of control, with trial lawyers taking away the money from hard-working, innocent doctors and corporations and good people. And pretty soon that whole story was transformed away from the maiming of a 70-year-old woman into a story of somebody who unjustly won the legal lottery and got rich on a runaway jury. Disgusting. Because the facts were, and they were adduced at trial, that the McDonald's Corporation had been repeatedly warned that they were serving their coffee at entirely too hot a temperature, that it was literally physically dangerous to drink, let alone spill. Evidence was further adduced at trial that McDonald's said they wanted to keep it at that temperature because the aroma got through the restaurants better that way and sold more coffee. They were utterly without regard for human well-being. And when the poor woman spilled her coffee, it went all over her lap and caused third-degree burns to her genitals, for which she had to have a series of reconstructive surgeries. But the only thing that the American people ever heard was, that dumb woman spilled her own coffee on her own lap, and she sued poor old Ronald McDonald and got rich. And that poor, pitiful, maimed woman became the butt of American jokes, because this is a brutal place. And the PR machine and the spin machine went into overdrive on tort reform. And in Texas, they passed a law. They passed a law that dealt specifically with medical malpractice cases against emergency room physicians. And the law that they passed, and they did it in 2003 under Rick Goodhair Perry, the law that they passed said that an injured person may not sue an emergency room doctor unless that injured person can prove that the emergency room doctor acted in a willful and wanton fashion. Willful and wanton is just a whistle stop away from intentional conduct. So no plaintiff's lawyer, no medical malpractice lawyer in the state of Texas that Connie Spears has spoken to thus far will touch her case. Because the conservative family values Republicans of Texas have closed the doors of the court to Connie Spears. A negligent doctor caused her to lose her legs. In the news story, it reports that she weeps and trembles. And it says that she says, "Do you know what it's like not to have any legs?"
We've lost all of our savings. I can't do anything on my own. It's ruined all of our lives. But we have no legal recourse.
And it's true. And to the reporter, she hiked up the hem of her dress a little ways so that the reporter could see what is described by Emily Ramshaw in the article as the thick pink scars stretched across her thighs like pillow seams. And Connie Spears is left with no recourse. No justice. None. Because she would have to prove, and this is a tall order for any lawyer, she would have to prove that not only did the emergency room doctor put her, Connie Spears, at extreme risk, but that he knew he was doing it when he sent her away and says, well, here's your diagnosis, both your legs hurt. The lawyer would have to prove that the doctor acted with conscious indifference or gross negligence, as opposed to the simple negligence standard of failed to do what a reasonable doctor in the same or similar circumstances would have done or not done to a reasonable degree of medical probability. John Powell is a San Antonio-based medical malpractice and personal injury lawyer. And he won't take Ms. Spears' case because of that willful and wanton threshold. It's impossible to prove. He said to the Texas Observer, you'd have to, and this is a quote, you'd have to be a Nazi death camp guard to meet this standard. Unless they purposely desire to hurt a patient, they're going to get a pass. Meanwhile, they have ballyhooed this new law because the insurance companies rewarded Texas for making it impossible for maimed human beings to sue by reducing physicians, emergency room physicians' medical malpractice premiums. Doctors' medical malpractice insurance rates have fallen by about 30% statewide. 82 Texas counties now have more emergency room physicians. You know, more doctors who say, diagnosis, both legs hurt. Right? Yeah. That's a hell of a note. That's a hell of a trade-off. Charles Bailey is general counsel for the Texas Hospital Association. He says, physicians and nurses who practice in emergency departments are working under time pressure to react quickly and save people's lives, often without information about past medical history and complications. It's a high standard, but they face a different type of risk than other provider settings. It's not a different standard, it's an impossible standard. And this is just one case. In a state the size of Texas, you know this hasn't happened just once. Both legs hurt. Connie Spears and her family have been ruined. Ruined. You know, the whole idea of a civil justice system, to go back historically speaking, is to cut down on incidents of retributive violence. You know, the kind of violence you get when somebody says, well, you took my legs, I'm going to take yours, and goes and shoots the doctor in both kneecaps. Right? Yeah. I mean, that really is. That was the origin of it, going all the way back to King Hoosus of England. who set up a court process whereby aggrieved persons could come before him for a decision instead of taking it out on each other. You know, that whole biblical eye for an eye thing. You just can't have that when you're the king, or pretty soon you're the king. You really are, you know, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. You can't have that. But in Texas, they prefer the old ways. They're traditionalists. But ultimately, this is a law that was passed by the legislature. The legislature was elected by voters. Elected by voters who have been trained and taught over the decades to see the political process as nothing more than reality television or a game show or some sort of the Monty Python upper class twit Olympics skit. And as long as Texas politicians put on, and they've got horse gag and loads of money to do it with, put on commercials saying, "Hi, I'm Billy Bob Dickhead, and I've got family values, and I'm a conservative, and Texas can be proud to have me in its legislature because I love Jeebus." And they don't love Jeebus. They don't have family values. What they are is little mincing tarts for organizations like the insurance industry. And they go and they do things like they did to Connie Spears. I would not trade places with Connie Spears for any amount of money. But were I Connie Spears, I would be doing some research to find out the name of every single legislator in the state of Texas who voted for that godforsaken, hate-filled law. And I would visit every one of them. And I would say, "Would you like to touch my stumps? 'Cause you gave them to me." I'd visit voters in their districts and say the same thing. "Here, feel my scars. You voted for that turd who voted for this law. They're not just my scars, they're yours. Take ownership of them, sweetie." Because it's going to take things like that to get voters to come back to the notion that this is more than voting for the all-star team in baseball, more than voting for American Idol, that you are literally screwing with people's lives when you step into that booth. And that your wrong choice will have downstream repercussions. Possibly for someone you don't know, but possibly for someone you do. And maybe even for someone you love. This Connie Spears case is the triumph of conservatism. She has a pair of conservative stumps where her legs used to be, because Republicans and family values conservatives decided that the insurance industry was more important than Connie Spears' legs were. And I'll go ahead and say the next thing, and it'll probably brand me as an asshole. But I'd like to know how Miss Spears votes, too. If she's a Democrat, I won't hold her responsible for what happened to her. But if ever, just once, she walked into a voting booth and pulled a lever, or punched a Chad, or touched a screen, or filled in a dot, next to someone with R next to their name, then she is at least partially the author of her own doom. You see how it works? And there's, this country is beginning to fill up with stories like this. They are literally all over the place. And not one for-profit media outlet, not one, will ask the hard questions that I have just asked, will point out that voting is an act with moral and ethical consequences and physical consequences. Not one will do that. Now that either means that they're on the take, or that I'm just a really, really mean, bad person. But I'm pretty comfortable with me, and I'm pretty comfortable with the idea that I'm not cruel, and I'm not venomous, and I'm not mean, but I do live in a reality-based world where magical thinking is not allowed and doesn't make anything better. You see, when they pass this kind of legislation, Repiglicans know that these will be the sorts of consequences that happen, but they don't care. Because they are, in fact, cruel. They are, in fact, heartless. They are, in fact, mean. It's that bumper sticker again. You know, the little yucky face sign, yucky face with the words next to it. Mean people suck. Texas Betsy letting me know that San Antonio went 60% Repiglican in the last election, if that's any indication. And it is. It is. Texas is fast becoming a vast right-wing wasteland. That's how you spell it, Betsy. Spears, S-P-E-A-R-S. Brutal, just brutal reality. But in America, we can't ask the voter registration of a serial killer, and we can't ask about why these awful things happen in these particular locales. Oh, and by the way, if I can ever get to it in my tabs, I forgot to restart the computer before the show. If I can ever get to it in my tabs, I've got an editorial by none other than Grover Drown the Government in the Bathtub Norquist, who is ballyhooing the impending bankruptcies of a number of states and saying, glory hallelujah, it's a chance to finally destroy those commie unions. You see, they don't care who they hurt. They don't care who they kill. They don't care who they maim, as long as they get their political way. Because there's no country first about it. It is all, every bit of it, party first. Party first. But we know that, right? Of course we do. Nonetheless, it is shocking and stunning and sickening when we are confronted with it. And you and I, being decent and moral and having an understanding of ethics and the ethics of the group dynamic, the effect of negligent voting on the nation as a whole and individuals one by one, we're shocked and sickened and horrified. But the Republicans aren't. They've got theirs. Except for the fact that they don't have all of theirs. You see, Ms. Spears could have been compensated. She could have been compensated so that she could at least be able to pay for her necessary treatment and caretaking through the rest of her life, except the Republicans in Texas said, no, you're not worth it. Your life is not worth, really, your life is not worth what an insurance company would have to pay out to at least financially make you whole after their insured doctor made you less than whole. That's the reality. And you will not hear that very many other places save here and maybe a couple of other outlets. But that doesn't make it any less the real. Onward we go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
No, that's because we have to be concerned about whether Obama is a fan of Michael Vick and he didn't acknowledge the crime enough. Did you see that shit?
No.
Oh, God, he called to talk about some alternative energy with the owner of the Eagles, and he, you know, commented on how he thought it was great that Vick had a second chance, you know, the whole second chance in America, blah, blah, blah. But apparently, I guess they had to come out and issue some statement saying, well, Obama isn't for the crime. So I guess, you know, he got attacked for that. And of course, it's once again, two black men can't have that. I mean, it's just like, are you kidding me? Yeah, I was amazed how quick, it's like a Shirley Sherrod moment came right out real quick and,
double quick on the run.
Right, I don't even know all the details, you know, I'm just being a bit of a bitch, but I just thought, well, later, because I read that earlier, I said, oh, that's interesting that Obama's commenting on Michael Vick. I didn't really give it any other thought. Then I go back, and there it is, White House says Obama is against the crime. So we got to hear about that. I wonder if that's going
to
be like...
Who would, the honest to Jesus, how stupid, who would think that he is? Well, never mind.
Exactly. No,
I'm sure that there could be, I'm sure there's a Glenn Beck special report in production, why Obama favors dogfighting.
Well, why is he backing, you know, why does he let himself get put in that position where he should just move on and not say anything at all? That's what I'm saying. Why respond? I mean, how many White Houses
Because they're scared.
How many White Houses are there? You get the one where Obama acts like a normal person, doing comments and critiquing things that, you know, we all might, except he's in a position that it would be known. But then you have the other White House that are ran by Song of the South people, and they go ahead and, you know, restate what he... I mean, it's just... Anyway, but I have to say, that article, it gets worse, too. Did you notice that the only upside is that more quacks are flooding the state, making work, you know, relieved. And I'm thinking, wait, is that the only upside? We don't have any recourse to bad treatment, but we get to have specialists in the boondocks because we're so grateful for these doctors who may not be well-trained, and now there's no recourse. I'm sorry, I'd rather have the legal recourse and less doctors, thank you, because now any fuck can have a degree and start experimenting on folks. I mean, there's no end to where...
Yeah, the Draw Spunky School of Medicine, sure.
There's no end to where this can go. I'm sorry, I realize that the insurance is a lot, but could that be a function also of the profession, too?
Understand if you go down in the article... You'll find out that the Texas, you know, and lo and behold, this seems about as activist as one thing could possibly be, Sandra. But Republicans don't call it activist judging, but judges in Texas have held that there is a lower standard of care for doctors practicing in ERs. Really? a lower standard of care. You win some, you lose some. Oh, well.
Right, but the thing is that, you know, you're supposed to present yourself with the understanding that this professional has enough expertise to not kill you. Now, of course, everyone makes mistakes. No profession is perfect. We all know this. That's why you have insurance, though. We shouldn't have to be subjected to luck of the draw that this motherfucker has the skills because, oh, my God, if something goes wrong, I'm ass out. That's not the way it's supposed to be. But that's the way it is in Texas. And if you go further down that article, they had another story about some other poor woman.
Yeah, her name is Jennifer McCready.
Yeah, it just goes on and on.
And just for the record, I'll go ahead and say it. These are both white folks.
Well, I was about to say, you know, it's off the hook otherwise, though, with the Latino and the black population, which is considerable in that state. God knows, but white women can get a bit of airtime at least for the moment.
And I mean, this woman thought she just broke her ankle.
Well, that's horrific. Yeah.
Turns out she spent hours upon hours in the ER of San Antonio's Methodist Hospital.
Yeah,
never saw a doctor. Was never referred to an orthopedic surgeon. Was kept on the so-called fast track, in other words, not critical section of the emergency room. The bones were never set. And as a result, she's crippled.
Well, no, because I had a bad motorcycle accident. You know, I had a compound fracture. I mean, I looked down and I saw white. If you know, it was bad. So I was rushed to the hospital, blah blah blah, and I was in pain. It was a nightmare. But I remember the first thing they did, regardless, they reset the bone, and then I had to go and wait for God knows how long before they did the surgery. But obviously, I remember that, and that seemed to be. It's really crucial that they got that sorted.
And so
you know what I mean? So it seems really
right,
of breaks.
But this, you've got to ask yourself, you know, this. I mean, we're talking about San Antonio. We're not talking about one of those little pissant towns that's, you know, with the crossroads and tumbleweeds.
No, they have a trauma center in San Antonio. I'm sure it's a city. So, I mean, no, it's just incredible. But it's. The whole mentality, it's like these people vote for these, and I know you went there, and I can't say I blame you, because that's always the question I have now, because there's consequences to these policies, and I suspect people go along with it because they don't have a care, and they don't make any connections with, oh, well, how is this going to affect people, because they don't give a shit about nobody but themselves and their situation. But then the situation changes, and they're, like, hit in the face with a new policy. And then what?
Katie bar the door?
And it's just sort of like, I mean, it's a horrific story. And I was like, you know, it's shocking to read that sort of stuff. And, you know, the implications are just so mind-boggling to the point where, you know, you're terrified to have anyone even look cross-eyed at you, Bob. I'll tell you, that's how I feel living down there.
Yeah.
I'd be like, you know what I'm saying? No, straight up, I'm not saying, oh, you should be able, you know, the threshold should be so high that these people are sued every 2 days. That's not the idea. But don't tell me that now that they don't have that over their head, oh, well, things happen. They just move on to the next poor sucker. If they know they don't have, you know what I'm saying? I don't know. I know maybe I'm being unfair. I mean, professionals, I guess they have their own personal standards. We got to rely on that. I mean, I don't know.
But consider, you know, you were talking about what's going on in the rest of the world. According to this article, 60 medical malpractice claims in Texas went down by 60% between 2003 and 2007. So that is, roughly speaking, a whole bunch of people who were just sent home to lump it and suffer.
Well, and also, though, but the correlation between that and the flood of new specialists, that doesn't inspire confidence. I'm sorry. That is not the means to increase your doctors, because how many stories have you seen where different people have been struck off of this record, off of that record, and they pop up somewhere? For example, in the celebrity world, that freak that killed Michael Jackson. Apparently he had a few issues.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean... It's a slightly different subspecialty, but you remember when Joe Scarborough's beautiful young assistant, Lori Klosutis, dropped dead in Joe's office?
The one that so-called hit her head on a table and died because of a heart ailment?
Right. The one with the heart ailment who ran 12 miles a day.
Right, who just happened to fall over with secondary trauma injuries on her head. Yeah, I know the one.
Yeah. And Florida's, you know, Florida has similarities to Texas. The guy who did Lori Klosutis' autopsy was a failed forensic pathologist from Missouri who had had his license yanked. But he just moved down to Florida and, looks like she bumped her head and had a mysterious heart attack. Let me write that down. That's pretty good. That's right up there with, got two legs that hurt.
Right, yeah.
And so, you know, there in Texas, hey, ER docs, you got trouble with malpractice suits in other states, come on down to Texas. Your troubles end when you cross the state line, baby.
Exactly. I mean, and so when I hear that it's increasing down there, I think more in terms of, you know, all these sort of bad practitioners who, you know, were removed out of other states. And anyway, I'm just sort of, I'm with you with the whole... people need to realize what these policies stand for and stop voting for these people. I just don't really understand it.
And yet, when one of us, and there's a guy in Texas who keeps introducing bills to try to return some level of justice to the so-called judicial system in Texas, every time he does it, and you've heard it across the country too, Sandra, wow, those liberals, they're just being hysterical. And lo and behold, there's a chunk of that right there in this article.
Oh, yeah. No. I read the article. I was just like, in the meanwhile, this woman don't have any legs. See,
Yeah, and she recounts the fact. She says she's got to have help to go to the bathroom. She's got to have help to shower. She's got to have help to get from room to room. She can't pick up her grandchildren.
Yes, she says she's dead weight.
She can't cook. She can't clean. She can't care for her own elderly mother.
And she went through all her savings. Don't forget that. There's
yeah, that's gone.
There's always that when you're dealing with the medical system. If it's a good outcome or not, from the sounds of it, there's always no more savings. I mean, and then you tie it with that Northwest shit you were talking about. That's horrific. And there's a reason why states aren't going to go bankrupt in a federal system. And also, their solution is always to screw over the public workers. It's amazing that they would want to bankrupt states just to continue our plunge towards those Bangladesh wages. Right, Bob?
Yep.
Yeah, anyway, I was sort of mortified by that. And I don't know. But on the other hand, I have to say, yeah, the voting for the Republicans are just, it seems real sick. But what are you going to do when you guys hear about Obama wanting to cut Social Security? What are you going to do then? This is my question. Because right now, it's easy for us to say, oh, my God, you can't vote for these Republicans. They're horrible. But I got to tell you, if the Democratic Party is going that way, I will be saying the exact same thing about them coming up.
Well, how can you not?
I can't do it.
And the only thing you can hope for is that out of the disaster of November 2nd, Sandra, that the progressive inclinations, at least in the House, will become stronger and more emboldened.
Yeah, one would like to think, and also other people will wake up when they hear that shit. I mean, that might galvanize some of them people on the right who rely on Social Security.
But see, some of this is reliant upon candidates being willing to be candidates and candidates being willing to speak truth to morons. I mention Alabama because, you know, my stomping grounds. But I remember a few years ago, I was down there while my dad was still alive. There was an election coming up, and Republican or Democrat, every one of them, every TV ad I saw, every radio ad I heard said, I'm a conservative family values Alabamian. Democrat or Republican, they've got to have some people step up down there and say, I am a liberal, and I will smash the mouth of the first person who tries to say anything bad about me being one.
Now, I mean, what do they do with that man who, I forget his name, who just sort of suggested maybe not taxing the poor completely out of control?
Yeah, that was Republican Governor Bob Riley.
Right, because you know how I was so shocked that they could tax you at $4,000 in Alabama. It just is mind-blowing, and I think he wanted to raise that just a little bit higher and maybe tax a little bit more on the top, and they ran him out on the rail, didn't they?
Well, they didn't run him out. I mean, he got a second term, but by God, he learned his lesson in a hurry, and never another word was heard of it.
Right, he didn't do that policy change, though.
Oh, no. No.
And there's more of people who are in a situation like that woman. I don't mean what happened to her, but that sort of person who are voting for Republicans. Otherwise, they wouldn't get the power, even if they are being supported by corporations. They still have to get some votes, and that's what's disturbing to me. It's like, what is it going to take?
But the thing is, that's where the whole business of turning American politics into a reality show and Saturday Night Wrestling comes in.
Right, because you don't think it's taken as seriously as it should be.
Well, that plus the fact that by the end of an election cycle, generally speaking, the electorate are so sick of the mudslinging, so sick of the filth that they say, well, the whole system's like that, and there's no difference between one or the other. And thus, a whole bunch of liberals stay the hell home, witness November 2nd, and the conservatives turn out in droves.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, you know, you have, but the thing is, you know, I just think that it would be a huge mistake for the Democrats to abandon Social Security, because it seems to be a program that actually works, and even if people don't realize it or not, type of program, it serves its purpose. Like some of the best government programs are the one that you don't think about, and that's it, Social Security. So the fact that Obama is even effing with it at all, it's so disturbing to me. I'm like, do you really know what you're doing?
And yeah, you mean and taking that Reagan biography on vacation?
Well, and even if he's not, the fact that they put it out there, they do that for a reason, and it's just really the implications of that.
Yeah, I remember when the White House put out George Bush's summer reading list, and you know it was like Kafka and Machiavelli, and you're thinking, oh no,
right?
No,
but it's just you know, and so they're putting that out, you know, for us to do what with? I mean, what are you left to think if you hear that Obama is reading a biography on Reagan? You know what I mean?
Yeah, and of course, can you imagine what would it have been if President Obama's taking Das Kapital with him?
Oil on Ice.
Yeah. Oh no. Yeah.
You know, or The Invisible Man, which is something maybe he should reread. Shit.
Yeah, a little Eldridge Cleaver.
So Ralph Ellison, you know. I don't know, but it's just, or some James Baldwin, you know, something that's a bit real. Reagan? Really? You know, anyway, so it's just demoralizing. But I have to move on to that other thing that was killing me that I sent to you was the, oh, shit, moment for the New York Times with WikiLeaks and the banks. That shit had me rolling.
Yeah, it was a real it was an oh shit moment. Hey, wait. Yeah, this could be what?
And it was like, hello, it took you a while, because the thing that's killing me about this is like, well, you're dumping on WikiLeaks and you want to bring him to trial and you want to do that or another. And meanwhile, next year you're planning to put a money wall up. This is the New York Times.
Yeah.
You're gonna be trying to collect dollars from folks to read your shit. And now you
didn't they do this already once? And it
yeah,
didn't...
yeah, yeah. And let me tell you, let me just say, the London Times did that, and guess what? 50% of their traffic disappeared just like that. And when the New York Times do it, I'll be going to the Guardian. Because the Guardian said they will never do it because it doesn't work. But
which is a damn fine reason for not doing it, if you ask me.
Well, the point is that not only, it's just sort of funny because the New York Times is talking about, But my question is, I took this to another level because I was thinking about it. I said, you know, it really makes the Alex Jones and all that bullshit even more bullshit, Bob, because if they was real, if that was really all the shit that was going on, then, you know, they would have put a stop to his shit, too. And the fact that they don't tells me something, too. I'm not sure exactly what it tells me, but it, you know.
Well, a hustle is a hustle is a hustle is a hustle is what it says to me.
Right, because, see, the banks, they're not messing with WikiLeaks, which tells me, well, you know, that seems to be the real story. I don't want that shutting down all these other freaks and conspiracy, because, it, you know, because it's just a bunch of BS. But something like WikiLeaks seems to be problematic for them to the point where they're happy to reveal to all what's really going on the web, which is that it's owned. And, you know, we're in a fantasy world out here thinking otherwise.
Oh, look, I've got problems here that I can't get sorted out that, you know, frankly, if I was, you know, some sort of multi-million dollar corporation, there would be people working night and day to solve my bandwidth issues. No, it's pay to play, and you know, when has it ever not been?
Well, but it's just sort of, you know, when you hear the sort of hand wringing and the moaning on about net neutrality and all this sort of stuff, I'm like, you know, yeah, right. You know what I mean? To me, if these models that can generate income have to rely on the window of financial intermediaries that don't act like intermediaries anymore, they act like the sort of sledgehammer of the state, but we got problems, and woes us to let the newspapers fold. You understand what I'm saying about that?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
That's a problem. If the Internet is what we're going to be left with.
And I saw a reprint of or maybe it wasn't a reprint. Maybe it was directly for Truth Out. Can't remember. But another one of those stunning little Chris Hedges essays.
He had one today that was scary.
Yeah, the one where he said, for a long time we questioned whether it was going to be, whether the future model was going to be Orwell or Huxley.
Oh, yeah, that one was, yeah.
And he said, lo and behold, it's both. You know, first we got Huxley, and now we get Orwell.
Yeah, I know when easy money runs out and all the bells and whistles go away, then you got to clamp down, and it's like, hello, Orwell. Yeah, I could have done without reading that.
Yeah, it was a little brutal.
It was, but I do think the sort of the WikiLeaks stuff really should refocus people's attitudes about systems of information, because the Internet, you know, we all love it. I can't live without it. But I can see where it'll be problematic if you allow other ways of connecting go away, which it seems to be what the idea is. And I don't know, I'm beginning to have some real problems with the print world going away and that kind of stuff, because if the banks can just shut down WikiLeaks, they can do that to anything.
Yeah, they can, and they will.
And it's sort of, you know, I just think complacency, I mean, it's easy to just sort of get lulled. And you know, when I think about I don't know the name of that Alex Jones website organization empire he got going on, but
oh, there's a dozen of them.
Right, but you know, the dude is always making out like, oh, they're just around the corner, they're round them up, and it's just like, yeah, right, sure, you know.
Exactly.
Anyway, yeah. So I was just that kind of you know, yeah, but the Christopher Hedges thing, yeah, that's...
Yeah, I might share a little bit of that here in a couple of minutes, just because
yeah, I
it's...
I think you will. But listen, I'll let you go.
All right. You take care, Sandra.
All right, bye.
Bye now. And we're going to take a quick break and come back with the second hour. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You are, in fact, listening to The Horn.
Katie tried, I was halfway cruising. crucified. I was on the other side of no tomorrow. You walked in and my life began again. Just when I'd spent the last piaster I could borrow. All night long, we would sing that stupid song. And every word we sang, I knew was true. Are you with me, Dr. Wu? Are you really just a shadow?
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right.
We do?
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at CityNet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit CityNet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Minutes past the hour. We are into hour two of the Horn. Moran Monday. A couple of emails rolling in regard to what we've been talking about. Let's start with Ron in Raleigh in regard to the medical malpractice story. Ron said, tort reform is a really sweet dodge. First, you cap the top award at $250,000. Then you see how many lawyers are willing to go up against a phalanx of corporate lawyers on retainer. $250,000 against unlimited corporate funds. Damn those greedy trial lawyers for being the last bastion against corporate or medical malfeasance. Remember, by the way, that Rand Paul is a doctor. I'm sure he's deeply moved by the sufferings of his patients. Oh. Well, he's... moved. I don't know if I'd use the word moved. William writing in, he said, this is the first Christmas my wife and I had that really sucked. Not one of the many stores had a toxic turkey in sight. Not one played anything like Christmas music or displayed any sort of Christmas decor. As we walked out of the main chain store, I felt like kicking the flower display out the door. Perhaps I'm just too old and remember better days. Or perhaps it's where I live. It's no, I don't think it's just you. I don't think it's just you, William. Because, well, again, you know what we have? We have an imitation of Christmas. We have a media facsimile of Christmas. Because all of that stuff, that homey, warm, comforting family together in the bosom of the yada yada, that doesn't happen anymore because of what's been done to the American family. And here's a hint, the gays didn't do it to the American family. The liberals didn't do it to the American family. The American family is riding on a razor-thin sliver of existence that could go south at any minute. And that takes a hell of a lot of the starch out of ho-ho-ho, jingle bells, merry this, and blessed that, and leaves us celebrating holidays and wishing for the ways our elders had. Onward to the phone. Hey, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Bob?
Pretty good, pretty good. Tobias?
Yes.
Good to hear from you.
Good to be heard. I wrote you a little email, but it wasn't very concise. Or it was too concise. I don't know which. Regarding this health care, the story you read about the lady that lost her legs due to...
medical malpractice, yeah.
Yeah, medical malpractice, thank you. My wife works in health care, and I'm not here to take the devil's advocate to take the other position by any stretch. I'm here to elucidate another part of this. My wife's a nurse's aide, and when people always find out, oh, your wife's in health care, because, you know, I'm in failing health, and that's not necessary. That's neither here nor there, whether my health situation. I know your daughter had gallbladder surgery recently.
That's true.
That She doing all right?
Yeah. Not everything has gone back to normal, and we're still trying to sort some stuff out. But at least she's not being tormented by her gallbladder anymore, which was down to like 2% functionality.
But the reason I preface that is that plays into our predicament. My wife has a failing gallbladder. She's a nurse's aide. And people always, then you must have great insurance. Well, she does have good insurance. But the policies of the giant healthcare monstrosity that she works for, and it's a large hospital, you know, and 61 miles away, she drives an hour and a half to get there. They work 12-hour shifts, which is the case, and so, and it's only 3 days, it only works 3 days out of seven, so it's a pretty good deal in that regard. When she went to her doctor, found, oh, you're down to 20% functionality, and it's decreasing. You know, went to see the surgeon, and said, we have to get this out, because she's in pain and has a gallbladder attack, which I'm sure you've witnessed these things. Ugly. Yeah, they come on, you know, out of nowhere, and you're out. You're just down. Well, she'd missed work, and they said, well, these absences, you're going to do something about it. She said, yeah, I know, talk to the surgeon, got to get the gallbladder out. And they said, well, that's a elective surgery, just like cosmetic surgery.
Yeah, like they're getting a tummy tuck.
And she's like, excuse me? So, yeah, that's elective. So we're not approving that right now. Which her surgeon scheduled the surgery for December 17th. And her work said, no, February 20th, that works best for us. Because you have to be off a month for the recuper time, because, you know, she's a nurse's aide. She can't lift patients.
Right. Well, no, I mean, Doodle had hers a couple or three weeks back. And, again, you know, she didn't go back to school. School's out for the break. And
right. The
plan is for her to go back to school when school... So, yeah, a month's recovery time.
Right.
And you know, just because they blow you up like a balloon,
mm-hmm,
and go in and do it laparoscopically and send you home the same day does not mean that they have not done what is used in the medical literature is called an insult to the body.
Right.
There's still stuff that's sewed up, stitched up, burned up, and it takes a while to get used to that.
Well, my wife's had major surgery. You know, she's had a complete hysterectomy, so she recovers from surgery well. We knew what we were in for. But the simple fact that the surgeon's on board, her doctor's on board, so of course her doctor is bleeding out the eyes because we actually have a good doctor. Her doctor's like, you have got to be kidding me. And, you know, what's the holdup? And, of course, the holdup is, oh, the hospital. Her employer, it's like, well, her employer, was it a coal mine? Is it a sweatshop? Yeah, it's a sweatshop. Then, of course, we told her doctor, yeah, it's a sweatshop. It's a hospital. And her doctor didn't miss a beat. She said, I don't doubt it because hospitals are the worst places as far as how they treat their employees.
Well, and if the hospital where your wife works is anything like many hospitals around the country, they work incredibly long hours and say, hey, look, here's the trade-off. You only work 3 days a week.
Right, exactly. You work 12-hour shifts 3 days a week. But you work all the holiday, you know, because, and that's the thing that goes, that they do the open discrimination of, we don't have any children and we don't celebrate Christmas or Easter or the traditional, put up little quotey fingers, Christian holidays, even though we're Christian, but we're non-traditional Christians. So they find out, you don't celebrate those?
What are you, one of them Jehovah's Witnesses?
No.
No, I mean, but I mean, I can, I, no, I
yeah,
can.
You know, and it doesn't take long for them to go one and one is, hey, you, she'll work every one of these holidays, which of course she won't, but it doesn't take long for the girl with a two-cylinder brain and scheduling to go, okay, so suddenly Megan is scheduled every one of these. And when she's asked, how come I'm always scheduled, but you don't have children? It's not a hardship for you. Excuse me? Okay.
Welcome to postmodern America, Tobias. I'm surprised, and that's one thing. Bless their hearts. You know, atheists don't get a holiday. There's no Christmas. There's no Easter. No Yom Kippur. No Eid. Nothing. Maybe we need to give atheists, Bertrand Russell's birthday off or something.
because they get abused in the same sense that the non-traditionalists like you and your wife get abused. And it's patently unfair. But so, too, is the regular work week. I mean,
absolutely.
I've worked, you know, I've pulled in various incarnations of my work life. I've worked 12 hours at a pop. I worked 24 continuous hours at a radio station one time. And by the end of hour 24, I just wasn't home anymore. But here's the kicker. At the end of hour number 10, I was out the door. There's something, you know, the human body is not made to deal with that kind of sustained effort under those circumstances.
No.
And so, yeah, and we've had nurses on the program who have talked about understaffing in America's hospitals.
Oh, you hit the nail on the head. It's like in my life, on the weekend, Friday being actually the worst day, because you don't want to go into a hospital on a Friday. You really don't want to go. I mean, because
nobody wants to be there.
Nobody wants to be there. That's exactly right. And, my wife's one of these people, and yes, I will admit my bias, but we have enough letters from patients who will write her letters and say, you gave me the best care. Thank you. And it's like she said, people don't want to be in the hospital anyway. So
I remember, for instance, this is kind of a personal story, but hell, all of them are, Tobias. Back in 1997, my mother died of medical malpractice. Maybe that's why it's a sensitive issue for me.
My father did, so.
She had her spleen removed. And she was in medical intensive care at the University of Alabama, Birmingham. And she had been vented. And she was being weaned off the vent. She'd been off the vent. She was breathing on her own. She was 72 years old. And it was a Saturday night. And they brought a guy in who had been involved in a gangbang shooting. And put him on the gurney right next to her after surgery. And as he came out of anesthesia on this Saturday night, he began screaming bloody murder, howling, just crazed. Anesthesia will do that to you.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother became so terrified that she could no longer breathe. And they put her back on the vent. And she never got off of it.
So they basically gave her a panic attack.
Yeah. And so from that December of 1996 until June of 1997, she lived with a hose down her throat and never recovered. And that wasn't even the medical malpractice. That had happened before that. But, it's a reality. And I had lawyers look at her case, and they said, great case. And this is 1997. Great case, but you know what? Alabama law, we don't have a chance. Because it was a state-sponsored, it was a state-owned hospital, the University of Alabama Birmingham Hospital, and they were immune from suit.
Yeah, they got a blanket. See, my wife works at an extension of the state, an extension of the University of Kentucky. In Lexington, so same deal.
Brutal business.
What's
the hospital going to do if your wife collapses on the job? I'm not trying to be scary or anything.
Oh no, it's the reality. Her doctor told her, look. When she asked them that, she said, look, what are you going to do? And they said, well, we'll admit you and do the surgery here. But you won't let me off to have it, even though it's already scheduled.
Yeah, and here's the other terrifying part. If it happens at work, don't try to file workers' comp.
Right.
Because you will not get it. Because they'll plead pre-existing condition.
Oh, they didn't want to give her Family Medical Leave Act because when she first went to the doctor, she thought it was a kidney stone. And, you know, that's why she went to the doctor. And, of course, her doctor examined her. She said, no, it's not a kidney stone. It's your gallbladder. And because when she called in, she said, it's a kidney stone. And then, of course, went to the doctor because she didn't know. And when she brought in the FMLA paperwork, her human resources person said, well, when you called in, you said it was a kidney stone, so I think we're going to deny this paperwork. It's like, I'm not a doctor. When I called in, that's what I thought. It's like when you call in, you say, well, I think I have a cold, and you go to the doctor later on that day, and you find, well, no, it's the flu. And when you tell people these reindeer games that go on, people say, well, and these are healthcare professionals. These are people actually in the healthcare system, not some other. And so, oh, yeah, they're the worst because they have a vested interest in denying more stuff because they're cogs in the machine.
And the question is, I suppose, Tobias, how do we change it? Because, you know, that HR person is just sitting there. And if you say, you know, why did you impose this misery? Well, I was only following orders. We've heard that before, haven't we?
Oh, my God. And it's only going to get worse because, you know, this is the wet dream of people like Grover Norquist. They want it all to be privatized. They want government, you know, to have no part in it. Because, see, my insurance is Medicare. And it ain't perfect. But it's, I would rather deal with it 100 times over than deal with the crap that she's dealing with.
And naturally. So is the plan just, you know, we'll wait till February?
No, and that's the plan is she's going to go back to her doctor on her off day if she makes it to Wednesday. And have her doctor go ahead and schedule the surgery ASAP and essentially treat it as emergency surgery.
And she winds up having it in a facility that she didn't want to have it in, right?
Right. Which, because that's, we were, and that's the nothing. We've already checked the infectious disease rates because we have a surgical center here in the, well, not we're a town, we live in a little town, but in the adjacent city, and we also have a hospital, and the surgeon has surgical privileges at both. And when he was scheduling, he said, "Well, we can get you in the hospital on one particular date." Or that's what we said, and we went for the consult, and we both said, "No, we went at the surgical center." And he said, "Well, it would be quicker to do it at the hospital." I said, "Yeah, but the infectious disease rate at the hospital is 3 times what it is at the surgical center." And he was shocked that we had done the homework on it. I'm like, no offense, dude, I wouldn't take my pet to that particular hospital because of the infectious, because of the MRSA rate is so high there.
Right, because Fido comes out with a flesh-eating, yeah.
And I said, but you got this new surgical center, and their infectious disease rate is very low. I said, that's so much better, and you have privileges of both. Why wouldn't we have it done there? And he was like, well, you know, most patients don't even check that. I said, well, we're not most patients. You know, I want her to live through the surgery.
Well, my heart goes out to you and to your lovely wife. But if it's any comfort, and if it is, it's the cold variety. We're all of us just cogs in the machine. Because as long... And I think it really does boil down to this. As long as our healthcare system is driven by the urge for profit instead of the urge to care for sick people, we're going to hear these stories again and again and again. Make sense?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're all in the same boat. And that's the problem, is the people who stay home and don't vote, regardless of your political coloring, The people who get mad and don't vote, and the ones that infuriate me is the people who, like somebody posted in the chat room, I don't keep up with politics. Okay, but you take advantage of it. You eat. It's like eating. It's like people say, no, I don't want to shovel manure. It stinks. I don't want to rake the garden. It's hot. But you want to eat the stuff that comes out of it.
Right. And that's and don't think for a minute, Tobias, that as I discussed with Sandra, that this is not wholly a manufactured thing. The American people have been manipulated into viewing their politics this way.
Oh, and like you said, we get the same ads here that when infuriates my wife and me as well, but she's the one that really just gets, you know, curtain climbing about it, is when you hear, I'm Joe Bob Riggs, you know, and my wife will listen on it, okay, is he a Democrat or a Republican? They will never even acknowledge what party they're from.
No, no.
You know, it's just God, the flag, patriotism, apple pie, guns, and but never, what, is he a Republican? Is he a Democrat? What is he?
But sooner or later, and I do ascribe some fault to our side on this, Tobias, sooner or later we have got to train candidates to step up and say, hello, I'm me, I'm a liberal, I'm not going to eat your Bible or break up your heterosexual marriage with the gays.
Well, I ascribe more than some blame. I give 99% of the blame. Because even though, yes, like I told you before, I'm a believer. I believe that, you know, faith is a personal thing. It's faith is a conversation between me and God. If you choose not to have that conversation, that's your business. That's not my business. And last time I checked, the Constitution said there shall be no religious test. But try getting that passed in any debate. They're always going to ask the candidates about their religion.
You know, I saw a tweet or an email posting or something earlier today that in a mandatory survey of military personnel, Tobias, that a majority of those responding to it said that atheists are not fit to serve in the military.
Giving service members a mandatory questionnaire about religion, there's the biggest problem with that statement.
But again, it's all part of the fabric of this country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when do we begin to attack? I mean, this notion of conservative family values. I'm a good conservative. When is it, I mean, when are we going to, well, you know, I already miss Howard Dean and his 50-state strategy. Sure would have been handy to have in this last election.
Hey, I'm a big fan of Howard Dean and the 50-state strategy, and that won all the seats that were lost in this last election, and the fact that Rahm Emanuel hated Howard Dean's guts, and that's the reason they lost all the stuff that they lost, and wouldn't give Howard Dean air if he had him in a jug, and I'm like, dude, you know, we're not going to go back to the 50 state strategy. Yeah, we won't go back to the clear strategy that won you what it won you. But
for me, the point is simply looking at all of this conservatism and say, yeah, look at Pritchard, Alabama. Look at San Antonio, Texas. Look at. These are all cases of conservative family values at work. Can we say yet that it is a failure? I'm a liberal. Let's fix this.
Absolutely. It goes back to the fact that you gain nothing by having liberals act like conservatives, the whole Republican light deal. We'll put on their clothes. We'll run around in their clothes, and maybe they'll like us better. No, they won't like you better.
No, and that's the whole point. When given an opportunity, instead of voting for an imitation Republican,
they'll vote for a real one.
They voted for the real one. And you know what? If I was in that boat, I'd do the same thing.
Because you're trying to appeal, well, we're not, but you got, because those people that they brought out, they're trying to appeal to that value set. Instead, you got to give them a true contrast and say, look, I'm not selling you what they're selling you. I'm not getting in a poison drinking contest with a rattlesnake. That's just crazy.
Oh, good one. That one goes on the list.
It's like, you know.
Yeah.
It's just, hello, it's.
But how many political consultants who are Democrats are out there would recommend that somebody run in Madison County, Alabama, or Mobile County, Alabama, as a liberal and say so? You know, the last guy who succeeded as a liberal in Alabama went to prison for being a liberal.
Right, and it's still there.
Don Siegelman.
Yep.
He was a brilliant politician. And he had really good ideas for the state of Alabama. But thanks with, you know, a little help from Karl Rove, he found himself in prison on charges relating to crimes that weren't even crimes.
Oh, I know. And
meanwhile, there's a story out today of Haley Baba. Remember Haley Baba down this level?
Yeah.
Who said, you know...
Real boss hog.
No kidding.
Yeah.
He's got some, you know, some Klan problems and some Klan walkback problems. But it turns out he's got bigger problems than that, because while he was governor of Mississippi, he used the state, the poorest state in the Union, Tobias. He used the poorest state in the Union's state aircraft for his own personal use. And it's not like there's anything new about that, except for the fact that Haley Barbour won't go to prison for it. Now, Alabama, once upon a time, invented a fine, upstanding, Christian, God-fearing man named Guy Hunt from Holly Pond, Alabama. And Guy Hunt used the state airplane to, because he was a tent meeting preacher, you know, one of them. He used the state airplane to fly to revivals.
They preach outside so God can hear them better.
Yeah, right. And the feds tried him and put him in prison for it. But you want to bet that'll happen to Haley Barbour?
Oh, absolutely won't.
It will not. But it's the same dodge. It's the same thing. So, you know, there we have it. Tobias, I hope the rest, my heart is with your lovely wife. And just, you know, give her our best regards and keep us updated, okay?
I surely will.
All right. You take care. Stay warm.
I'll do what I can.
I know. Bye now. That's Tobias calling from Kentucky. Let's move on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there, this is Chris from Nanaimo.
Hey, Chris, what's up?
Because of Tobias's call, something came up. I was just saying, everybody in the Horn family and all liberals should really look into medical tourism just to keep your options open. That going for a local solution, just because you know the doctor and all that, isn't any reason to, again, clear out all those savings. You know, if this medical system is going to be corrupt in your country and there's not a damn thing you can do about it, just, you know, staying the course and trying to fight the system from within is, you know, not a solution when your life is on the line. You know, you feel free to come up to Canada or go to New Zealand or Australia and...
Even India.
India, yeah, and just collapse there, at which point, oh, you have a severe medical condition, come here. Okay, $500 and we'll treat you just like any one of our citizens, and every medical treatment will charge you $200 for. Oh, so $700 and I get my gallbladder removed and everything's honky-dory? Oh, yeah, no problem. Oh, and I can buy the medicines that will make me healthy, hearty, and whole at Canadian rates. Yes. Unless you have insurance, which one would be even cheaper? Oh, well, Canadian rates are good enough for me. So, again, nationalism and national pride is all well and good, but don't put your life before that, you know? But what I really called up about was something's been bugging me. I remember in my first year of psychology... the guy was talking about these highs and lows of liberalism versus conservatism, introversion versus extroversion, coming after wars and such. And he described the extreme socialism that came to us because of World War II, and we went on this upslide of prosperity. And then as people became more prosperous, they become more conservative, and things start to go down in terms of prosperity, and then people become social. There's this wonderful wave, and he traced it all the way back to the War of the Roses that just keeps going up and down, up and down. And these cycles are inevitable. But the big trick to it is that cycle gets really long when you have historical knowledge, institutional knowledge, in the form of people living more than three generations, where you can ask Grandpa, what was it like back in the days of the wobbly? But if you can kill off Grandpa, who was a wobbly and actually knows from beans and has, again, that historical knowledge, you don't have that fallback position, that institutional knowledge. You can't...
Chris, I have a different term for it. I call it transgenerational wisdom.
That's good for me.
And I've actually talked about this kind of thing on the air because I was actually a beneficiary of it. My grandmother, both of my maternal grandmother and my paternal grandfather were both born in 1894. So was my maternal grandfather. I never met my maternal grandfather, but I darn sure knew both grandmothers and briefly knew my grandfather. And especially with my maternal grandmother, I got I got an absolute treasure trove of wisdom from her. As a little boy, I got to sit down with World War I veterans. And I guess maybe I'm telling them, you know, I'll soon be 48 years old, but I don't feel old. My wife, her dad was born in 1915. And so she too was exposed to a radically different world. And exposed to, you know, there are pictures out there, of my great-great-grandmother. And they are old before their time, Chris. There's no Social Security. There is nothing but the horror of hapless old age for them. And there's no medical care. Now, granted, they lived to long lives because they worked like dogs all their lives and basically kept their bodies in decent shape. But old age was a nightmare. My grandmother, born in 1894, just used to look at me and say, "Oh, don't ever get old. Getting old is awful." But of course it wasn't. But I've touched on the same point your professor did, because the point that I made was that there was no way that a Republican president could get away with saying he wanted to privatize Social Security until the generation that my grandmother came from was dead. Because there would have been an outcry. There would have, the old folks would have gone absolutely nuts on them. But now that they're gone, and now that we live in a culture in which people are numbed by their televisions and driven to distraction by their jobs and economic desperation, you can get away with almost anything. Does that sound like about the same thing?
Yeah, it seems like the same thing. I'm just looking at this next curve that's coming up, and where you are not, well, maybe you are the leading edge, but you're not the crazy blood dripping off the fangs leading edge of communist revolutionary thought in the States. But I don't see that anywhere in the States. I mean, everybody I've been talking to say things are as bad now as they were back in the Great Depression. The unemployment's at around the same level if you're looking at the U6, not the silly U3 that makes politicians look good. I'm looking for this whole, where's the leading edge of this rabid radicalism that you're supposed to see when you're coming back up and socialism is supposed to be taking hold and, you know, the whole construction of the language. But I'm not seeing it.
Chris, it's not because you're missing it. It isn't there. You know, that's why on this program so frequently we say, what left?
Exactly. But what are we doing wrong that the people back in the 20s and 30s who had that knowledge did right? How did they get it out? Before the Internet.
It's not before the Internet, Chris. It's before television.
That's it, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, I don't mean to be simplistic, but it really is, because there was there were brutal times, and frankly, in terms of employment, we are not there yet. I'm not talking about unemployment. I'm talking about how employers treat their employees. We are heading there with things like this editorial from Grover Norquist that says, "Let the states go bankrupt and destroy the public workers' unions and destroy the pensions." We're headed there, but we're not there yet. But again, I'll make the same argument that I've made all along. As long as the cable stays on, there will be no one in the streets.
Is it the cable or is it the satellite? Because I got a bit of background behind me, and I could take out every satellite on the planet for the next 100 years. I have a plan for that. I could just break myself, bankrupt myself, and do it. But how the hell do you take out cable, Bob? I mean, the whole reason why people went to cable is the whole NORAD initiative to get the continent wired, so that if nukes ever took out cities, you could have this, you know, Internet that would allow you to communicate between them. I mean, TV is based on the Internet now. It's nuclear bomb-proof. How do you take out cable? And how do you do it?
This dovetails over to the Chris Hedges piece that I was talking with Sandra about. It was published today from at Truth Out, from where Hedges put it up at Truth Dig, and it's called 2011, A Brave New Dystopia. And in this, he argues, as I said, that for a long time we asked which dystopian future would be the one that actually took hold, Aldous Huxley's basic pleasure principle kind of future dystopia, or the brutal repression of Orwell's 1984. And what Hedges argues is that it's a hybrid. That the first thing we got was the slow pacification of the masses through a pleasurized society, a materialized, consumerized society. And now that that is going away, now that the jobs are drying up and so forth, that now the repressive society of Orwell is coming online. And I think there's a lot of truth in that. And so when we talk about what do you do with the cable, actually nobody's going to take out the cable. And this is the Orwell side of it. Chris, nobody's going to take out the cable. What's going to happen is people are going to stop being able to pay for it. Because you know what? The cable company's pretty ruthless. If you call them up and say, hey, I'm going to be a couple of days late, they don't give a damn. Click, no more cable. And then there's a reconnect fee.
Different experience with cable. Cable, as it's run in this, Canada, is basically paid for by the advertisements. And the incredible profit margins come from the fees people pay, not because they really need to charge the fees, just because they can get away with it with a deregulation. They used to actually make their profit margins, not great profit margins, but they used to make them without any fees at all. There's actually a law in Canada saying that if you broadcast something in somebody's a wall outlet or across their whatever, they have the right to do whatever they want to it. If it's encrypted, well, they have the right to decrypt it. So it throws the whole encrypting satellite television thing out the window, which is why we're allowed to get away with it technically up here. As long as it's done on our, we're not broadcasting it for money. As long as we don't try to profiteer off of it, we can do whatever we want.
But see, that model never took hold in the States. It has been profit-driven from day one.
Well, it means it can work there if they need it to. So if they don't have people who can pay for it, the states may put up a token fee, a dollar tax or something like that, the TV fee, just like they do in Britain. That means if you want TV, you pay the fee, the tax, and now you have a license.
But remember, we live in America is a country that has wholesale rejected the idea of both taxation and government. If you go back to the Friday show, the story we covered about Pritchard, Alabama, their pension fund went belly up, so they just started not sending checks. It's against the law, but who's going to stop them? And they weren't going to raise taxes, and somebody's already died. This is a country that has rejected the fundamental principle of its own founding, because government has to be able to operate. It has to have funds with which to operate. To take it a step further,
or Fox makes so much money off of its advertisements, if they pay that buck for everybody they can get their signal into and just get their station and no one else's, it might actually go on the networks.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what a basic
networks that can pay get in.
I don't know what a basic cable hookup looks like where you are, Chris. But down here, there are multiple tiers of programming depending on how much you want to pay. And God, you can pay and pay if you really want all the bells and whistles. But here's the kicker. Always, it seems, and I've never seen an exception to this rule, always the basic cable package, essentially channels 2 through 13, always include Fox News. They won't include CNN, they won't include headline news. They won't include MSNBC, God knows, or CNBC, or anything else like that. But Fox News will always be there. And therefore, they know that, and what happens is, money's tight, so you go down a tier. And it keeps getting tighter, so you go down a tier. Eventually, you're at basic cable, but you've still got that constant droning of Fox News coming at your ear holes and your eye holes. And so you're reassured that the reason that all of your problems are happening is because of brown people and gay people and people who just generally aren't white like you. And therefore, you're not in the streets. Because it couldn't possibly be the corporations that are raping you without a reach around. It's the brown people and the gay people.
Yeah, of course. It's always somebody else, some shiny thing they can dangle in front
Bingo,
of
Bingo, yeah.
We agree that the TV is the problem, but how do we, Bob, you know, either the left or the radical left that will replace us one day, how do the left deal with cable? It's an infrastructure problem. I really don't know. I'm completely out of ideas, and I don't like to admit that. How do you go about getting something that's a decentralized infrastructure thing that's all hardwire all over the place? Now, they always say, oh, as long as it's got infrastructure, it's vulnerable. Just look at the power grid. The power grid is big, heavy connectors going from place to place, and it's out in the middle of nowhere. These are suburban things that go under people's boulevards and such. How do you get at that? Do you just go to the central nexus? Well, they can replace the central nexus. If it's one line, well, you take a small neighborhood that gets replaced.
You know, I don't think that you can take it out per se. Ultimately, you've got to wait for a time when you can convince people to walk away from it. And that, you know, that's everything from how you raise your children to how you talk to your neighbors. You know, that's a community that in autumn has street fairs and reasons for people to come out of their houses and find out that they still have neighbors. You know, you asked how did they organize in the days before, in the early parts of the 20th century. They organized because they had community and because people acknowledged that they had neighbors. You know, a long time ago I mentioned the disappearance of the front porch from American society. If you drive down the lane in any American town where there's an older part of town and, you know, the nice old houses with the old oak trees in front of them and everything, Chris, they've all got big front porches. And then you move out into the suburbs that were built after World War II, and the porches are gone. They're replaced by a front stoop.
Yeah, my wife has been advocating for porches on top of buildings if they're not going to build them out to the side, but I think you're seeing a larger picture. I hadn't thought of.
And so you get out into your community and you take your kids with you from the time that they're old enough to be moved around. At least that's what we've done here. And when you catch them, as I have, when you catch your kid watching something heinous on television, frankly, I'm open to being debated with over this, I attack it frontally. You know, bless her heart, I caught my 13-year-old watching the Jersey Shore. And I just looked at her and said, you know what? I open the newspaper every day hoping to read that Snooki has been hit by a bus. And that was probably a mistake on my part. But, you know, it's part of that whole raising kids thing where you say this is wrong and this is right and let's do the right thing. And you go out into community and you talk fearlessly in your community about how bad it is to let the television rule your existence. You know, people, I mean, you can't swing a dead cat here. It's a little teeny tiny community, but you can't swing a dead cat, Chris, without hitting a church. And what happens when people go to church? Well, by God, they sit and talk about what they watched on TV. It's not even church anymore.
But there's no secular alternative to church, which really pissed me and my wife off. But basically what you're saying is that it's grinding absolute poverty where starvation is always the rule, where you will survive depending on who you know and how well you get along with your neighbors. That is literally the only opt-out for the TV culture that would really solve not much trouble at all.
That, as far as I can tell, yes.
Good God. How many people have to die so we can escape these people? Terrifying, it really is.
You know, I don't, I'm not going to run off down, you know, down Malthusian Boulevard. But you know, that thinking certainly exists. You know, obviously the planet, you know, and it's a hard conversation to have, the planet is past its carrying capacity. The only way we can carry the population we have on this planet right now, Chris, is by doing incredibly stupid things with food. By virtue of machines and processes that are even harder on the planet. You know, Chilean, you know, for me to sit in West Virginia in late December and eat Chilean grapes, you know, I have nothing against the Chilean people and they have lovely grapes, but I want them to have their grapes. Because I don't need them in December. That's what raisins are for. And you know, the whole locavore movement within the food community is worth paying attention to. You know, if and it's those things that you start in a community that actually engage a community back. I mean, to a certain extent, I'm lucky in where I live in that if you can if we could get a small band of people together and make it absolutely apolitical and say we are going to rediscover the ways of our forebears, because being hillbillies, Chris, we were sustainable before sustainable was cool.
Yeah.
You know, the only thing that my great-grandfather couldn't raise on his farm was oranges, bananas, and sugar. And to a certain extent, he could jump over sugar with maple trees,
sugar beets,
and sorghums.
Oh, sorghums. Yeah.
Because sorghum's a weed that grows in temperate areas.
Yeah, it also produces a fiber, and it produces a flour. You can use it to make bread, you can use it to make cloth, and you can use it to make sugar, which is just, you know, it does one up on hemp. And it's not heavily restricted for various pharmaceutical reasons as hemp is.
Yeah. And if you go back and you try to rediscover that, then suddenly people begin to figure out what community's about. And if you teach kids to can and to dry and to quilt and woodcraft and how to mushroom hunt and not die from it and medicinal plants and all of that stuff, then you bring them back home. Because essentially, you know, television is a way of sitting in your chair and yet not being where you are. And getting out and getting in your community and getting active in your community is a way of regrounding. But you know what? The problem, Chris, is it's not sexy. It's not, you know, nobody's chaining themselves to the White House gate, and that doesn't appeal to some in our sector.
What I never understood is, how is it not sexy? Have you ever seen the numbers on the kids that were produced back in the teens, the 20s, the 30s? I mean, how is not having, you know, a herd of children sexy? I mean, that is literally the product of sex.
You're so true.
And it's like, oh, no, I don't want to have 15 children. I just want to have one, and then my wife can cut off my reproductive organs and bury them in the backyard.
You know, and I mean, and here's the fun part. I can drive out the road to the graves of my forebears, and we're talking about my forebears who existed at a time when the average lifespan in the United States was maybe 54. And my forebears are all in the dirt, having lived into their 90s. Now, how did that happen?
I'm hoping it's sex, but I'm probably wrong.
Well, it was that and hard work and, frankly, seasonality. Seasonal living. You know, I love my garden. One of these days I'll be able to put another one in and the deer won't eat it. During the winter you eat a lot of fats and meat. And you work around the house. You know, this is harness mending time. This is when the farmer with his harness gear is sitting there literally mending the leather harnesses for the spring plowing. And it's not as intense as it is in spring when you get up before the sun and you go to bed almost before the sun is up again. But then when the high summer comes on, you know, the first things that come in here in the hills are ramps, which are a ramp is a take on the old English word ramsach, which means garlic. And it's a native thing here. It's got a short, like a green onion stalk, but it is profoundly intense. The ramps come up, then the morels come up, and in your garden, the first things that you put in are your onion sets and your lettuce, and you begin to eat, and then as everything else comes in the garden, you're canning some and putting some back, and you're drying some, and you're eating some fresh. And lo and behold, I mean, those 90-year-old forebears of mine, Chris, and bear in mind, I come from a stock of people who are triglyceride factories. We are cholesterol manufacturing plants. But they live to be 90. And without, you know, without statin drugs and without the yada, 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 you know the stuff. Mm-hmm. And they ate pork and pork fat and chicken fat and beef fat. But they worked like dogs, and they didn't eat it, you know, with the in supersized portions.
I think it's the corn fructose that really did us in, but the portion control, the whole idea of apparent prosperity through giant portions, you can see that right from the 20s to the 50s, that the bigger the portion was, the more prosperous you were. And then once they introduced corn fructose, it's the sweeter it is, the more prosperous you are. And you can just see our waistlines going up through like a geometric function because of that. Oh, John Hopkins released that lovely study last August on the cellular study. It says if you eat, the cellular one said, if you eat corn fructose, any cancer cell in your body consumes that about 10 times faster, 8 to 10 times faster
Absolutely.
Than the normal fructose, which means your immune system usually eats your cancers. Everybody gets a little cancer now and then, and your immune system deals with it fine, unless it's growing 10 times faster than every other cancer cell that immune system is going to see.
And that's why I am an absolute, and I hate to use this word, but this is done humorously, I am an absolute label Nazi. If my wife and I are going through the grocery store, I pick stuff up now, and I look, and oh, look, high fructose corn syrup. Goodbye. Maltodextrin. Goodbye. And I won't bring the crap into my home anymore.
Well, we've been finding up here in Canada, we had this program that was on for the longest time, but didn't get funding, surprise, surprise, called Deconstructing Dinner. And he actually went after a lot of these companies that had labeled, mislabeled, and if it's processed by industrial processes from industrial farms, you literally don't know. You can never know. And it's in the labeling. It's just artificial flavors. Under artificial flavors, they can include just about anything, even the sugars.
Yeah, and the opposite side of that is you put the word natural flavoring on it. For instance, in the local Walmarts here, Wally World, they no longer have butchers. No one cuts meat. Everything's prepackaged and comes in, and it's got a little label on it that says, this hamburger may be a melange coming from Argentina, Chile, Australia, Mexico, Canada, and or the United States. You know, and I think at the bottom they should just put good luck.
Brings a whole new term to the term.
But it says also includes or ingredients ground beef and natural flavorings. You know what the natural flavoring is in the raw ground beef at Walmart, Chris?
Scraped off the floor at the cutting blade?
No, water.
Water?
Water.
Oh, water. Right, artificial hydration. Right.
And nitrogen gas. Inert. But it's natural, you know, just like those right-wing freaks say, well, CO2 is natural. It can't possibly be bad for you. They've never heard of a miner dropping dead from what's called the choke damp. You know, what big pocket of CO2. Yeah.
The carbon monoxide they expose all the meat to, so a 12-week-old steak looks just prime and happy.
And so, you know, that's part of the con. But, you know, overall, let me thank you for opening up this line of inquiry because it's absolutely fascinating. Because we have, you know, sometimes people say, well, you know, Bob, what's the solution for right now? And I go, I'm not the Shell answer man. But what I think we're doing here, and I had an email from Jim a couple of minutes ago, and he said, we are fast approaching a Fahrenheit 451 situation. When may we expect firefighter Montag to appear? To a certain extent, he already walks among us. We have televisions the size of walls now. Ray Bradbury he's no prophet, he's just a futurist. But there's a lot of truth to that. And if you remember the substrate, Chris, to Fahrenheit 451, there were rememberers. And one guy was Shakespeare, and another guy was Rousseau, and another guy was Poe, and another guy was Plato. And what we've got to do, rather than saying, you know, we're going to change things now, I think you recognize that, you know, that we're dealing with a curve, a pendulum curve that is long and flat right now, or nearly flat. And as such, what we have to do is we have to be talking about this stuff, and we have to be reinforcing each other and keeping each other in a good state of mind. You know, this isn't Glenn Beck's go out and buy the freeze-dried water stuff. This is be prepared to be the transmitter of that transgenerational wisdom we were talking about. My wife and I were talking over Christmas dinner, And she said, you know, honey, one of the things you've got to do is you've got to write down everything you do for Christmas dinner. All the recipes, all the preparation, you got to write all this down, and we got to make sure that all of our children have a copy. And all of our grandchildren have their own copy, because that's how we'll pass the tradition down. Well, we have to take that approach to practically every aspect of our lives. You know, you talked, we've talked about, Sandra was talking about, you know, if real newspapers go away, what trouble we're in. You know, we know about the Epic of Gilgamesh out of the ancient Sumerian society because the stuff was written on baked clay that became as hard as rock. Our culture has nothing carved in stone. Our entire information culture is as fragile as the backbones of the servers of the internet. It can literally disappear, and I think you probably understand that from a technological standpoint better than I do.
I'm just thinking one North Korean nuclear weapon detonated in the ionosphere on this hemisphere wipes out the information infrastructure of a bloody culture, and all of a sudden there's not everything that's on YouTube just disappears. I mean, I'm just trying to come to this point where the internet no longer exists. The whole contemplation of a 1992 lifestyle, just after having a 2010 lifestyle, just there's nothing. There's no computers. There's no nothing. And, just one other thing that's been bugging the living crap out of me. They don't need a nuke. North Korea doesn't need a nuke. Iran doesn't need a nuke. Chernobyl showed us that you don't need a nuclear weapon to toast the planet. You can sterilize every human being, every mammal, every plant on the planet with just the material contained in any standard-sized nuclear reactor. All you have to do is be really bad at using it, and you can kill all life on planet. Maybe not immediately in a searing, blinding flash of light that's all, you know, cathartic and such, but you can do it. So everybody who has nuclear power has a doomsday device. That's one of the reasons Canada never got nukes. They didn't figure there was much point. A, it just gets targets written on your back, and two, what's the point? We have 15 to 20 nuclear reactors all across the country. If we decide to put Homer Simpson in charge of any one of them, we're all glowy critters in the night that won't have any children anymore.
Well, that's true, and the fact of the matter is you don't know how many Homer Simpsons there are. Long before Homer Simpson was even a twinkle in the eye of Matt Groening, we had a little nuclear reactor near where I grew up in Alabama called Brown's Ferry. And they were minutes away, literally minutes away, Chris, from their own Chernobyl. And they got there. Yeah, they got there because they were doing routine maintenance and they were checking for gas leaks, and they did it with a candle. And they found one. Rather dramatically.
Mm-hmm. They taught me about 9/11. They taught me about not 9/11, the New York one, 3 Mile Island.
Yeah, PA. Yeah.
3 Mile Island, 9/11. It gets mixed up. Harper's Ferry, Chernobyl, and, there was an incident in Brazil when I was doing my physics, and they're just telling, look, radiation.
And don't forget the weapons-grade munitions plant on the Savannah River, or the one built on a fault line in, Hansford, Washington?
Or the one out in California.
Yeah, the beautiful stuff, beautiful stuff. Well, Chris, a lot of thought-provoking stuff. Don't be a stranger. I love these conversations. All right, you take care.
Cheers.
Bye now. From Canada, that's Chris. I love these wide-ranging conversations. Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Hey, what's up, Cossack?
Hey, not much. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm hanging in, you know, getting over the Christmas dinner and all that stuff, and getting back to my usual fare.
How's Doodle doing?
Feeling some better, but she's still got issues.
Yeah. Abdominal surgery is abominable surgery, as I can attest to. Not a lot of fun.
Doesn't sound like it. And from what I've witnessed, no, it's not. And as someone who somewhere down the road is probably facing it, I'm facing it with dread. Because one of these days my malrotated innards are going to have to be straightened out.
Not something I would want to think about too much.
I try not to.
Oh, by the way, Warrior Witch says hi to everyone.
Oh, howdy, howdy.
She's still in limbo trying to get connected.
Oh, no.
We all know how that is.
Well, I had noticed her rather, her absence and sort of worried, you know, did I piss her off? Or
Nah, connection problems.
Well, I know about that because we're not getting the bandwidth we're supposed to have, and it's quite frustrating.
You mentioned that your mom died through medical accident.
Yes.
Yeah.
Medical negligence.
Yes. That's the way I tend to look at my mom's passing. She went to the hospital because she needed some tests. They had to keep her overnight. And while she was there, she developed MRSA and that killed her.
Ugh. It's awful. Yeah, you know, I was there when my mom passed away, and it's painful to this day to think about.
Yeah.
Because it was really fascinating. You know, Medicare has $1 million cap.
Right.
And they kept her plugged in and plugged up and things breathing for her and everything doing everything else for her. But the minute that they got the last of $1 million, they called the entire family in for a conference and said, well, you know, it's time we stopped playing God.
Right. Well, at least that, in our case, my brother and I had to decide to have her unhooked, essentially. We'd gotten to the point to where she'd lost 95% of her lung function, and they weren't going to be able to keep her on oxygen much longer anyway. They had her on 100% oxygen. She was getting maybe 2% in her bloodstream.
Fish.
I mean, it's just...
No, yeah, you know, you enter that sort of medical feedback loop of ventilator, infection, antibiotic, negative impact on kidneys, ventilator, infection, antibiotic, negative, until they kill the kidneys. And that's what ultimately killed my mother, was kidney failure. And it was hateful.
It's difficult, to say the least. I mean, I know when, unfortunately, I had to go in for my surgery on my intestines. It was, excuse the expression, it was a grave-ass emergency. I mean, I got home from the doctor, and there was a message for me to immediately, don't pack a bag, don't do anything, just hop in the car and head over, because you're getting operated. And it was a near run thing. Yeah, almost didn't make it. And it's kind of the problem. The more they mess with your innards, the less likely you are to make it out the other end.
Well, yeah, because these things called adhesions form, and it's really ugly. And yes.
Yeah. And
you know, there's Doodle. She's had an appendectomy and a cholecystectomy in the space of a year.
Eh. That's nasty, to say the least. And plus the fact, like I said, it's hellaciously painful to recover from.
Yeah.
There's a lot of nerves down the abdomen. Boy, howdy is there ever. And you find out about each and every one of them. Because they're all screaming in concert. Last week or so, I've been having a hellacious case of trigeminal neuralgia.
I know about that too.
Yeah, it's not pretty.
It's hellaciously painful.
Yeah. I mean, I was on pain meds. I was drinking alcohol too.
Oh, that's always a bonus combination.
Well, sometimes you need to do what you need to do just to make the pain, if not stop, at least tone it down just a tad, so you're not screaming to crawl out of your own body.
Oh, I know, and I worry that maybe some might think that this has suddenly turned into Aches and Pains radio, but you know, this is the real stuff that community talks about. I got up yesterday morning. Agnes has been sitting overnights with an elderly relative of mine. And so I get up and I go get her every morning. And I got up yesterday morning to go get her. And just rising up out of bed, I, you know, just did my morning, you know, stretch, twist, and I heard something in my neck go, and all of a sudden, you know,
never a good sign.
Yeah, okay. It was like having a mugger behind me. Don't move a muscle. Okay, I won't. And thanks to a sturdy course of ibuprofen over the last couple of days, it's getting a little bit better.
Thank God for that. You need to see yourself a backcracker.
Well, they only that'd be great if I had coverage to see one with, but yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
It's a bit.
I'm far too wealthy for Pofolk's Medicaid here in West Virginia.
Oh yeah.
Let's see. Yeah, the medication that keeps my triglycerides in check went empty today, so.
Well, I don't know how I lucked out, but since I'm on Medicare, and since the vast majority of the check goes to buy drugs, and not the fun kind either, you know. Somehow I managed.
Dude, let's do some statins. I hear they're a righteous buzz.
There you go. I mean.
Yeah, I snorted some Nexium the other day, and you know, wow, what a blast!
You know, it's like, like I said, luckily I got notified that because you're in such wonderful shape, we've decided to put you in this special program. I get my brand name prescriptions for something like $330 a pop, and the generic ones for $110 a pop. Yeah, I can live with that. That way I can actually afford to take the 20-some-odd meds they have me scheduled for. If it wasn't for that, I'd be bankrupt. But you know how it is. I'm living the high life over here. So
oh, right, yeah.
We have to take Medicaid away from these undeserving people who have no real reason for wanting to be on Medicare or Medicaid.
Well, you know, you're in Florida, and I read some story the other day about a jackass down there that, or it's Rick Scott or one of his functionaries who is quoting some research to prove that people who are unemployed are lazy and don't try to find jobs.
Do they have any idea of what real life is really about?
Let's see. It was Rick Scott's economic transition team. And they said, according to former U.S. Assistant Treasury Secretary Alan Krueger's research, the amount of time people on unemployment compensation spent looking for a job averaged only 20 minutes a day. Within 2 weeks of UC ending, that increased, but only to 70 minutes a day. So what do they want to do? They want to tighten the job search requirements. They want to cut off assistance for those who don't comply. This is your state, Cossack.
Oh, I know.
Cut off assistance for those who don't comply, and they want to assign community work for those who don't get a job in 12 weeks.
And what do you do about all the people like we have around here who, during the season, work nice, productive jobs, and then when the restaurants close down for the winter, they go on unemployment because they are unemployed because the jobs went away.
Right. And there's only one problem with this whole Rick Scott story, Cossack, and that is that, well, they were, surprise, lying.
Of course.
Because the actual number is 40 minutes a day and not 20. But you know what? 40 minutes a day when you're unemployed is significant because you're spending a more significant part of the rest of the time trying to survive.
Yeah.
Trying to keep the cable on.
Well, even if they don't, just try and get everything organized. See, this is the thing, Bob. Certainly, if one applies for every single program that is available out there, and and takes advantage of all these different things, they might actually survive. But the problem of it is there is no one who tells you, okay, you qualify for this, 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 this. You go here to apply for all these benefits. No. You need to find out where these things are. You need to find out that, that those programs exist, even though they don't bother you.
But more, but as much as that, Cossack, what's critical out of this story is the fact that in typical Repiglican fashion, what assumptions do they make? They assume that unemployment compensation is just too generous.
Correct.
Completely leaping over the fact that the problem with the unemployed is the fact that there aren't any damn jobs.
Exactly. Exactly.
And yet this is one of those teabagging horses' asses who wants to, we've already found out what he wants to do, but he thinks that tax cuts in crippled Florida, that tax cuts are going to create jobs. And newsflash, they ain't. Never have. A tax, you know, the right wing likes to say,
well, government's never created a single job.
But the truth of the matter is, a tax cut has never created a single job.
Correct. Well, if their philosophy were correct, why aren't we rolling in jobs now? We've been following this prescription at least since Reagan. And where has it gotten us?
Exactly.
I mean, nowhere that I think we'd want to be. I don't really think that they want people to starve. Maybe they do. God only knows.
Well, just remember what God-fearing, righteous, upstanding Christian leader John Hagee said. Starve! Cossack, have yourself a good night, brother.
Here.
I hope things let up and you get to feeling some better.
I hope so, too.
Take care.
Take care, Bob.
Bye now. The Cossack calling from the wonderful world of Florida. And onward we go.
Hello?
Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hey, Juanita.
Hey. Welcome to Florida. You know, what was the gentleman's name to talk about his wife in the gallbladder?
Oh, that was Tobias.
Yeah, Tobias. That is what makes me so mad when you hear these people talking, and including politicians, about we don't want to lose our doctors and we want to go to the doctor of our choice. Well, I tell you, I don't know too many people who get to go to the doctor of their choice. You have, and I'm talking about with, you know, before any kind of health care was passed, and you don't have a choice. You have a choice of like here, like two or three doctors. Now, if you're on Medicare, you can go to pretty much any doctor that will take you. But I'm on what they call WellCare, and I didn't know it's authorized by the Republicans.
Oh, is that one of those dodgy Medicaid sort of privatization things?
It is a private, yeah. And it's the one I found out. You know, after they started talking about passing health care, I found out that it costs the government more than regular Medicare does. But the problem with my Medicare was not being able to get prescriptions and other things. But then it's kind of a yin for a yang. You know, I thought one time about changing over to Medicare because it's what they call Advantage plans. It's kind of like HMOs, really.
Yeah, and only there's no advantage to it.
Well, they're taking way less and less. But we had it at one time, and I got some. As you know, it's supposed to be food from Meals on Wheels. this was frozen food, and I swear it had to be some of that stuff that they fed our troops over in Iraq. You know, Chinese business, you know.
Yeah.
It was terrible. It was unbelievable. And they claim, like, you know, if you'd had surgery or something, it'd be good. Well, that it was all that, I call it conglomeration, you know. It was, once in a while, they would have plain fish and so forth. And I asked if I could have, you know, just the straight-out fish and all the time. And, you know, whatever you got. It was gobbledygook this, gobbledygook that, and it'd be watery, and it just,
Yeah.
And I tried. I got to where I couldn't handle it.
Juanita, I have to tell you, this does not qualify as the food porn portion of the program.
Okay. But I said, my God, I feel sorry for these people. Their doctor thinks they're going to get some good food. You know, if you have surgery, you can't eat just everything. In fact, you can't
eat much of anything.
Yes, they sick sometime, you know, too. But, and I've been through that gallbladder situation. I had mine when you had the big cut. And then later on, I had to have my cystic duct removed because it was trying to act like a gallbladder. So I don't know what they do now.
Well, that was downright uppity of your cystic duct.
I know it. So what I do if something else tries to act like one. But I had pain and definitely sickness. I felt like each of my fingernails was individual, had individual's mouth, but nothing would come out. It just stayed. And you just, I finally found some medication, you know, that I could use. And, of course, for a long time, they thought it was my back because I had back pain. It was my gallbladder hurting me. I had that. I remember having it in school. So, anyway, it did, you know, things did get better. But, my God, when you've had all that anesthesia and all, you don't feel like eating gobbledygook.
No.
But what I wanted to say was that's what makes me mad is these people, you know, say, well, I'm going to keep my doctor. I don't want to have the doctor my choice. Well, as things get worse and worse, nobody's going to have a choice of much of anything, including the people who are so well off now that they don't care about anybody else. And anyway, it just makes me mad to hear what his wife has had to go through, because it's so common, and a lot of these people don't know. They have no idea. And I you know, my friend I used to have, the right wing friend, that she was talking about how the doctors are having to pay all this insurance, and I said, this has been going on since way back yonder, you know, like at least 20 years ago. We had a great doctor that was from Germany. He was an anesthesiologist. And he finally moved back to Germany because of the price of the insurance. But then who gets blamed for the insurance being so high?
Hurt people.
Hurt people, right. And Bob, you probably didn't get a dime of, or your daddy didn't get a dime out of your mother's desk, did you?
No, they wouldn't. No, we couldn't, because by law, they at the University of Alabama, Birmingham, they can malpractice till they're blue in the faces, and nobody can touch them because they are an arm of the state, and the state is immune from suit.
Yeah, and a lot of insurance companies the same way. Maybe, I don't know if all of them, but I know like what I've got is immune. And if you try to do something really drastically, you can get yourself in jail. But people don't know. They don't have any idea of the drummer they're listening to, that they're following, the beat that they're following. And I listened to the Christmas show, and I couldn't believe your youngin. Ferg, that voice.
Oh, Ferg with his new manly sound.
Yeah, I mean, just, and he read so beautifully. He was, of course, you know, I'm partial to boys, so a young boy, and he read so beautifully, and I thought he's got to get into radio.
Oh, he wants to. They're working on him hard down at the church, trying to get him into the gospel sharpened business. But because there's some talent there.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I can really hear it now. But what was that? Something you had said something about on that show. Now you played another part. Was that from last year?
I played
the children.
Yeah, I played last year's show as well.
Okay, and his voice was changing then. You could hear a little bit.
Right.
It was still, but this time it's straight out.
Oh yeah, and he's working on pitching it down into James Earl Jones territory one evening. This is CNN.
Why make a lot of money like that?
Luke, I am your father. He just turned 15 yesterday. He walks around saying things, Luke, I am your father, to see if he can get it down in James Earl Jones land.
See, I'm just saying, this is CNN, you know. James Earl Jones. Yeah. But anyway, I have some other things to say, but my mind is drifting.
Happens to me all the time.
Oh, by the way, talking about internet problems. This morning I get up and I can't get on the internet. I don't have any of the lights. Finally called, I did it through my, through the cable company. And finally called and got somebody and they were trying to help figure out and they couldn't locate my, modem. And anyway, my son came in and he said, well, that modem's dead. And, the guy was wanting to send somebody out, you know, so that might be thirsty. And there's a lovely word that I learned from a rich old woman that was had everything her way, but I loved what she said. Her telephone went out of whack. She called the phone company. And I told her it'd be about two or three days, and she said, that is not acceptable. And she stayed on the phone till she got the big shot. They came out that day. But I told him, I said, that's not acceptable. I like to use that.
it says so much in terms of I'm not happy. I'm about to get unhappier. And but I'm entirely too graceful to use the fun words.
I remember what I want to tell you. This is like a series of events all connected from this modem. And my son said, well, you just need another modem. And can't we get one from them? And so I told him, and I said, can't we get another modem? Oh, yeah. And so that's what we did. Well, I went over. And, of course, they were just lined up, almost squat outside. And I finally got, you know, up in this, I'd say, between 35 and 40-something, black guy was behind me. And we got to talking, and he said, oh, it's no use in complaining, you know, so they're doing the best they can. And I said, that's right. And then I forget what he said, and then Bobby won't believe this. He said about moving down here, and I said, well, where were you? Where did you come from? West Virginia.
Oh, dear. A lot of us do. A lot of us do.
And I said, well, I have a real good friend from West Virginia who has a radio show on the internet. And he was talking about the governor, you know, the new senator and so forth. He said, well,
he's no Senator Byrd.
No Senator Byrd. He said, maybe he cares a little about the people. And he had a little bit of admiration for Rockefeller, but he said he's still, you know, not sure about him. But, he said that, but this is the funny thing. He said, now, my wife has always been a Democrat, but since we moved to Florida, she's couldn't find any Democrats she could believe in. And so she's in a Republican situation. Oh, my God. But I don't think he was along for the game. But I thought that was interesting that here I met somebody and from West Virginia, of all places.
We are everywhere.
Yeah. But it was interesting, you know, that he came in behind me, you know, and we just started talking. And I just thought, you just never know. Because we do meet people down here from everywhere, but honestly, I don't meet that many people from West Virginia. I meet a lot of people from...
We're few and far between, Juanita, but we have a way... We just pop up. That's all I can say.
Yeah, you do. And that was a pleasant encounter. He was a nice guy. He really was a nice guy. And I told him I was a little disappointed in Obama. He said, well, I think he's doing the best he can. So, you know, interesting. But we shall see what we shall see.
Indeed.
Well, okay, Bob, I'm going to let you go because I'm...
Well, you have yourself a wonderful evening, and I hope you had a good Christmas.
Yeah, I did. It makes me angry, you know, though, about the way we're being lied to about insurance and about all these civil suits, all these suits and all malpractice. And, you know, I could have been rolling in the dough if I could have got money for all the malpractice I've been through. I've been through a lot of it. And took a long time for a lot of it to be corrected, and it never was fully corrected. But I tell you, some things you said about your mother, my heart just breaks for what she went through.
It was hell, Juanita. It broke my father, and it broke me.
Oh, I can believe it, because it wasn't just about that. It was about her breast surgery that I remember you telling about that. How close together was all of that?
Her breast cancer experience was in 1973.
Yeah.
And she had a brutal aftermath of cobalt radiation.
Yeah.
Burned her to a frazzle.
Yeah.
And probably
that, and it burned him too.
And probably somewhere along the way, some of the after effects of that were what led to the disease that ultimately killed her.
Yeah.
Caused her spleen to enlarge, and they let her go for so long, Juanita, that the night before my mother had her surgery, her splenectomy, the night before her surgery, she was bigger than she was the night before she gave birth to me.
Oh my God!
And it was all spleen.
Yeah, and it just goes on so much. It just goes on a whole lot, and it's not all the doctors either. Not all the doctors' fault. You know, a lot of doctors are kind of...
Well, in this case, it was.
Yeah, I know. I've had them, too. But this one guy left me in such a bad shape till I didn't want to live anymore. And I thought, well, I'm no good to anybody. And I thought, well, I'll just... Well, to kill myself. And my son was little. He was probably 3 years old. I love you, Mama, you know. He's the one kept me going.
Sure.
He loved me just the way I was, and my mother was living then, and she did too. And I wasn't able to work at the time. I mean, if you'd have just seen me from the outside, you would have known what I was going through. But I'll tell you, this country's got to do better, Bob, or we're out.
And we have to be, and like I said in my conversation with Chris, we have to be in the position to retain the knowledge and pass the knowledge along.
Yeah. Well, I try to do that to the best of my ability. I don't know how well I'm doing, but anyway. I hope I'll do better in the future, too.
Well, that's all any of us can hope for, isn't it?
Okay, Bob, and good night, and Happy New Year, or I guess maybe I'll hear from you again before the New Year.
I'll be here all week. Try the veal.
You take care.
Take care. Bye now.
All right, night-night.
And that is Juanita. A little programming note. I'm really at odds with myself. My beloved Mountaineers take the field in the Lindemann Stump Grinder Bowl tomorrow night at about 6:30. Probably kickoff's probably about 7 or so. And, you know, I like that means something. It just does. But I will probably be here because we've had so many problems lately that missing a show, even for something like kicking back and relaxing and watching a Mountaineer bowl game with a blanket over my head peering through the cracks between my fingers, is something I can't afford to do. But somebody's going to have to keep me updated. No, David in Tennessee will probably do that. Keep me updated on the progress of the game. Kate writing in, she says, what a nice change. Such a nice program discussing real life instead of the rants about the crap that's sliding downhill. Talking about canning and recording family traditions and survival techniques is refreshing. So much better than hearing about what the morons are talking about today. Thank you, everyone. Kate says, do I get to pick my own book to memorize? I've already read The Stand 24 times. Does that count? As long as you get it committed to memory, Kate. You can be another book too. Just remember. But see, that's the whole point. The crap is sliding downhill, and we know who's making it slide downhill. And it's the fact that, it's the fact that there are strategies for dealing with it that make it, that make conversations like how to necessary. But I always worry about these conversations because I never know when they're going to verge over into Alex Jones, Glenn Beck, buy some freeze-dried food, buy gold now, gun up, get your rifles, stock your pistols, have 30,000 rounds of ammunition, yada, 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 yada. And I don't want it to be that. I see learning sustainable living techniques as valuable even outside some sort of apocalyptic future. I think there's value in eating the food that you've grown because the food that you grow is better for you than the food that they grow. Because at least if you choose to put fertilizer or pesticide on your plants, you know what fertilizer and pesticide you've used. The same cannot be said of the industrial food grid. To the same extent, if you choose to grow a certain seed, you know what seed you've grown. And if you're smart about it, you can save seed till next year. The same cannot be said of the people who want, I mean, good God, they developed a Frankenspud. A potato that would literally kill, a goat's intestine gene spliced into it that would kill a potato bug if a potato bug bit the potato leaf. It amazes me that we can have scientific developments like this that wholesale don't take into account the fact that evolution is a presence. If you make a Frankenspud with a goat stomach gene in it that kills the potato bug when it bites the potato leaf, consider the rate at which potato bugs breed. How long will it take to breed a better potato bug that's resistant to the goat stomach gene? And then the next thing you know, you're genetically modifying a potato and adding, I don't know, a gene from an aardvark kidney. And pretty soon it's not a damned potato anymore. It just isn't. You know what I mean? This came in from our buddy Joe Ray, the foxhole atheist. He said, Bob, I just needed to point out some simple truths that we all know but keep trying to forget about. Let's be honest with ourselves. America and China now share the same legal system. Specifically, that he who has the money is legal and all the rest of us are not. The only reason we still bother with elections is so the right-wingers will continue to defend the people oppressing them and us. And editorially, I'll note that that's exactly what goes on in places like Texas. People literally are dying for the right to protect insurance companies from people that the doctors they insure maim. See how it works? Anyway, Joe goes on and says, my evidence, 1, foreign-based torture camps, 2, Bush and company are free and will remain so until death, 3, PFC Manning, 4, our elected officials openly calling for the murder of Assange, 5, last and most important, no matter who we elect, we get the same laws, examples, healthcare, SSI, economy. I read a comment earlier today about don't ask, don't tell, and there was something sort of grim about it because there was a political calculus involved that I really, really hated acknowledging. This person, I forget who wrote it, was very, very cynical and argued that don't ask, don't tell was repealed because the corporations didn't mind if it was repealed.
Because whenever the corporations decide something cannot be law, it does not become law. Public option? Anybody? Bueller? They're right. Ending the war in Afghanistan? What was it? It was going to be 2011, then it was going to be 2012, now it's going to be 2014, and ultimately it will never be. Why? Because it's good for business. You see. Yeah. I think you do. John directed me to a tune a little bit ago that I've got an urge to play. He was turned on to it by our pop culture correspondent, David from Maine. It's called Black Country Communion. The band is made up of Jason Bonham, the son of John Bonzo Bonham, Led Zeppelin fame, Glenn Hughes from Deep Purple, Black Sabbath, and Trapeze, the keyboardist from Dream Theater, Billy Idol, Alice Cooper, and New York City guitarist Joe Bonamosa. That's not to say that Dream Theater, Billy Idol, and Alice Cooper are... No. It's the keyboardist for those guys. It's the brainchild of the Black Crowes producer, Kevin Shirley. And John's pretty stoked about it. When John recommends a song like this, I think it's probably worthwhile for us to hear it. So we'll take a little break and come back and wrap things up. You are listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice on our way to the end of December. And... you know, it puts me in a spot. I every time I celebrate a little bit and say something like, "Ooh, look, we made it to the halfway mark on the month," everything goes, or almost everything goes, and dries up. But the fact of the matter is, we made it halfway. We made it to $1,250. And then we pulled up a lot short. Or we have so far. So we're running downhill to December 31st. I don't think there will be a December 31st show, just because I might be able to convince Agnes to sneak out and cut a rug with me, and we don't do that very often. Depends on the in large part it depends on the weather. But at any rate, we'll take a little break and check out Beggar Man from Black Country Communion right here on the Horn.
Yeah.
won't be no beggar man no more. I think that sort of plays into the theme of what we started out with, and the reduction. Well, you know, the reduction of human beings to things to be neglected in places like Texas and the rest of the country. You know, Texas is just an avatar for what for the disease that is spreading across this country. I mentioned the Chris Hedges article from Truth Dig. I saw it at Truth Out. And he writes, we have been gradually disempowered by a corporate state that, as Huxley foresaw, seduced and manipulated us through sensual gratification, cheap mass-produced goods, boundless credit, political theater, and amusement. While we were entertained, the regulations that once kept predatory corporate power in check were dismantled. The laws that once protected us were rewritten, and we were impoverished. Now that credit is drying up, and this is the kicker, now that credit is drying up, good jobs for the working class are gone forever, and mass-produced goods are unaffordable, we find ourselves transported from Brave New World to 1984. The state, crippled by massive deficits, endless war, and corporate malfeasance, is sliding toward bankruptcy. It is time for Big Brother to take over from Huxley's feelies, the orgy-porgy, and the centrifugal bumble puppy. We are moving from a society where we are skillfully manipulated by lies and illusions to one where we are overtly controlled. And with that in mind, I go back to the op-ed piece from Politico by none other than Grover Drown the Government in the Bathtub Norquist. After 2 years of bailouts, stimulus spending, quotes around stimulus, TARP and earmarks, the country took a deep breath and is now beginning a discussion about the unsustainable trajectory of federal expenditures and the reforms necessary, remember the reforms, necessary to right the country's fiscal ship. Because righting the country's fiscal ship in Grover Norquist land means destroying governance as we understand it, and leaving an entire populace to the tender mercies of the so-called unseen hand of the free market. He says, this day of reckoning has convinced policy experts, political observers, and some on Capitol Hill that federal legislation allowing states to file bankruptcy might be the only way to avoid a federal bailout of the most fiscally reckless states in the Union. Now, what does that mean, fiscally reckless states, do you suppose? What he means is many states, including those with the country's largest population centers, are now on a path to insolvency. This is primarily due to What? No, not predatory capitalism, not hateful right-wingism. No. This is primarily due to fiscally promiscuous lawmakers skyrocketing Medicaid costs, you damn sick poor people, and unsustainable, here it is, gold-plated government employee pension plans that most Americans could never dream of. Gold-plated government employee pension plans, of the kind that kept a man from dying inside his own home in Pritchard, Alabama. See, these people, no, they're not people, these things, these monsters, these misanthropes like Grover Norquist. They have their lobster lunches and their limousine rides. And they never think about a place like Pritchard, Alabama. He quotes a University of Pennsylvania law professor who says, letting states file for bankruptcy to shed some of their obligations could save American taxpayers a great deal of money. What does he mean by their obligations? He means pensions. He blames unions. He blames unions and pension plans for the fiscal problems that states are in. Hello, Prop 13, California. You know what? Unions didn't do that. Unions did not pass NAFTA. Unions did not pass GATT. Unions did not totally dismantle the governmental income structure. But that's okay. Because in this 1984 phase, are you sick? You get blamed. Are you out of work? You get blamed.
Did you work all your blessed life, and now you're trying to just ease on in toward the end of it with a little bit of dignity and a pension check that comes once a month? Everything in America is your fault, according to the psychopath Grover Norquist. It's all just wake-up time. You can stay asleep by the TV, or you can wake up into the nightmare and push back the bats and the snakes and the fear, and talk among your neighbors and help them do it too. You can do this. We can do this a little at a time. Thanks, everybody, for all that you do, for continuing to support this program and the network and the future. Thanks to our chat room moderator, Lottie. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to Reverbo at Cavalcade of Crazy, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Matt Osborne at OsborneInc.com, our Southeast correspondent. Thanks to my head writer, David in Tennessee, our chief engineer, webmaster, web designer, and all-around help-keep-Bob-sane consultant, John Fox. And thanks to Ben Birch, whose ongoing efforts since 2002 at WhiteRoseSociety.org have literally saved liberal radio on the Internet. Thanks, as always, to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.